I was in the supermarket yesterday in the checkout lane, and I'm next, and there's a very attractive cashier standing there, lovely young woman, and she and I, you know, say, good morning. She says, good morning. She says, did you find everything you were looking for? And I said out loud to her, I'm looking for happiness, the meaning of life, and whole wheat bread. And she laughed. She laughed at that. I've been using that line for 10 years now, and the cashiers never laugh. They just look at me like I'm odd. But this girl laughed. And I said to her, nobody ever laughs at that joke. And she said, I've been talking to the other cashiers. I know.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
Now I don't think I like her anymore.
Whatever.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. Oh yeah, it's the Ron Van Dam Show. You clicked on it, don't blame me. Here we go.
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Dam, as you can see. As you can clearly see by not seeing me, it is me. Thank you so much for being here. You should receive some type of an award for this, or a Purple Heart or something. I don't know. Do I really want a Purple Heart? Doesn't sound like the color of my heart should be purple. I would say give people a red heart, a healthy heart, not a heart that's like discolored. That doesn't sound right. But I guess it means something else other than what I understand it to be. Welcome to the program. I could talk politics for 17 years and not take a breath, but I won't do it because I don't want to bore you. All I can tell you is, holy crap, are we in a barrel of problems. And it's all due to what I call individual one, the douchebag, who sits in the White House and is just... I don't know who wrote this novel and made it come to life, but it's scaring the hell out of me. Anyway, how are you? Good to be with you. Here's something pretty scary, man, and I actually thought about this a couple of years ago when they were talking about drones. You know, I think drones were created originally by the military in order to complete successful bombing missions without expending the lives of our military. I get it. Nice if you do it properly, but that opens the door for all kinds of other terrible things to occur. And then Amazon started talking about drones when they said someday they'll be delivering packages to your house with little airplanes. And I thought to myself, what kind of drugs are you on, Amazon? I don't know if it's being done, but if I saw a tiny little plane approaching my house and my front door, I'd think I was under attack or something. I still don't think it's possible. Drones can be used for horrible things if you're not careful. It's like everything else. It's like Facebook. It can be wonderful or it can be horrible. Right now, it's horrible. So here's what's going on. I don't know if you heard this, but just yesterday, drones were spotted in the area of Gatwick Airport, which is England's second largest airport. It's used quite frequently for travel. There's Heathrow and there's Gatwick. Gatwick closed down twice yesterday for hours and hours, flights canceled, postponed, because drones, little drones, were sighted flying around the airport. Well, that's a danger to the airplanes. Also, you don't know what these drones are doing there. I mean, they could have cameras, they could have explosives, you don't know. This happened twice. There were two incidents of this yesterday, two shutdowns of that airport. It disrupted travel at Christmas time, which is, this is the big travel weekend, supposedly. And then I started thinking, and I'm watching the news, and they're talking about this, and they're thinking along the same lines I am, because I always think the worst. The worst is always a possible. I think the best, too. But the worst comes into play as well, always. Years ago, terrorists, ISIS, which, by the way, according to President Individual One, douchebag Trump, we've defeated ISIS. Oh, good. I'm glad that threat is over. What are you, nuts? What are you, nuts? You think that threat is ever over? Anyway, forget it. I'm sorry. I don't want to talk about him. ISIS and terrorists actually said they'll be using drones for terrorism. How horrible and how simple that would be for them. All they have to do is strap an explosive, a light one, onto a drone and fly it into something. How do you stop that? The reason that Gatwick Airport closed, why didn't the military just shoot down these drones? Because they didn't know what was in them or what they were carrying, A. And B, if you shoot down things in the air that's close to the ground, there's the possibility of stray bullets hitting people on the ground. So they were kind of at a loss. And I'm thinking, oh my God, you're at a loss for something like that? What if something horrible was used on a drone? What if I saw a drone coming toward my house or something like that? I mean, what the hell do you do? All you can do is stand there and yell, drone! This could be a good argument for owning a gun. Shoot down a drone that's, I mean, if drone's over your property, whether it's Amazon delivering a package or whatever, do I have the right to shoot down a drone because it's like hovering over my property or on my property? I think I do, if I consider it to be a threat. All kinds of legal questions coming up with this drone crap, and originally created again for two reasons. One, to get beautiful pictures from the air, and the second, to carry out military maneuvers. I think the military maneuvers thing is pretty much like the problem one. But, again, I overthink everything, so excuse me. You don't understand the possibilities of everything. Look, you decided to listen to this show. Don't blame me.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Did they just not offer you a second choice, or did you not have a lot of time to choose? Help me out here. I don't understand. What were you thinking?
I don't know. Only you can answer that. Only you can prevent forest fires. I could never be a cashier in a grocery store, in a supermarket. I could never do it. It's not a bad job. It seems like it's kind of fun because you're working with people all day. And if you're a very happy, snappy person, it can be a wonderful social thing. I'd have a great time. Hi, how are you today? Did you have fun? Did you find everything you were looking for in life? I would start conversations and just go crazy talking to people. Unless the management says, don't talk to the people. Don't talk. Just do your job. Don't talk. say hello, ask if they've found everything they were looking for, and then just shut up. Do not talk to the people. You're not allowed. Don't have conversations. You're not there to have conversations with people. You're there to do your job. Just ask if they found everything they were looking for, paper or plastic, and then shut up.
Shut up!
But I would have a great time. I would have a great time doing it. But here's the problem. Here's why I could never be a cashier in a supermarket or a grocery store or any place that has food. Because I would want to eat everything. I would constantly, as I'm checking out the stuff, I would say, oh, that's on sale. In the store in which I'm working, I'm getting that today. Ooh, that looks good. Ooh, that looks good. Ooh, where'd you get that? Ooh, what aisle was that in? Ooh, that really looks good. Ooh, you going to make it with potatoes? Ooh, it looks really wonderful. Ooh, look at that cake. Ooh, look. I couldn't do it. When my shift was over, I'd just buy everything that I saw coming down my conveyor belt. Food brings me too much joy. I'm not really fat, but my eyes are. When I see food, I just go, this was created not only because my body needs the fuel, but because it's a wonderland of wonderful tastes, and that's just food is wonderful. That's why I can't work in a grocery store. I'm banned. I can't. If I put in an application to work in a supermarket, they'd say, wait a minute, you're Ron Van Dam. Yes, I am. You can't work here. Why? You're Ron Van Dam. You can't work here. Why not? You're too critical. You're grumpy. You would abuse the customers verbally. You can't work here. You have a very, very bad reputation in this particular grocery store and every grocery store. You're actually on a national file of don't hire him. But I'm a wonderful person. No, you're not. You're causing trouble. You just cause trouble everywhere you go. Oh, I didn't know that. Well, it's in the file. Wow, that's awful. It's an awful thing. I went to CVS yesterday because I had a 30% off coupon. I walked around the store for hours trying to find something that I really wanted. I wanted to find something really expensive, something that was like $100, and I just get it for $30. It's an easy way to do the math, round it off to 100. But I couldn't find anything. So I ended up using my 30% coupon on a bottle of aspirin because I need those. I need aspirin, baby aspirin. Yeah, right. My doctor tells me, here she is again. My doctor tells me that every night before I go to bed, I should take a baby aspirin. I said to her, you do realize that I'm not a baby. I weigh a lot more than the average baby. I weigh like 2,000 times more than the average baby. So why are you recommending a baby aspirin? She said, because it's a low dose. We don't call it baby aspirin. We call it low dosage aspirin, asshole. And she slipped that word in there, and I didn't even catch it at first. And she said that it's good for your heart. I said, oh, okay, fine. I did not know that. I didn't know that was a life-saving device. I thought it was just when you had a headache or something. She says, no. She says, actually, taking aspirin on a regular basis, adult-size aspirin, can actually do great damage to your stomach and your stomach lining. I said, oh, okay. So you want me to take baby aspirin? She said, low-dosage aspirin. Stop calling it baby aspirin. I said, okay, you know, I'm on the other side of the lifespan. I'm like the opposite of a baby. So it's just like, what do you recommend for little babies? Adult aspirin? I mean, what are you doing? You're driving me crazy, doctor lady. As I've said many times, my doctor is a lady. I have no problem with that. And she is a vegetarian. I have a problem with that. That to me is like a religious cult. She asks me every time I go in there for a checkup. I know I've talked about this before, but it just floors me. Every time I walk in, the first thing she says to me is, how much meat to eat during the week? And I say, you know, thanks for taking care of me, but it's none of your damn business. She says, well, you really should go vegetarian. You'd have a much better life. I said, oh, okay, fine. I've always wanted my skin tone to be yellow and not to have the ability to pick up a fork because it's too heavy. I mean, I know vegetarians. Some of them are quite healthy. Most of them are not. She said, well, you could be a vegan. I said, no, I was born on this planet. She says, no, that's not what I mean. She suggested I don't eat meat at all. And I don't know, every once in a while it gets to me, and I try not to eat meat, and then I realize that there is meat available. Again, I've said this many times before, I do not like eating animals. I don't like it, I think it's wrong. I think humans should have evolved beyond that. On the other hand, I look at the history of this planet. All living things ever did was just eat other living things. I mean, it's really, I mean, it's always been like that. Animals eat other animals. The only good part is there's no animal that can eat me right now. And contrary to cartoons, dinosaurs and people did not exist at the same time. When there were dinosaurs, there were no people. But Ron, what about the Flintstones? Oh my God, cut it out. Are you serious? I actually met a guy during this holiday season who actually thought that the Flintstones was a possibility and actually was a depiction of the way things really used to be. I said, oh really? You think that there were cars powered by your feet? And he actually said, well, yeah, that's possible. And I guess we got along with the dinosaurs then. They were pets. You're a moron. I'm not going to ask you who you voted for in the last election because I think I already know that. But you're a moron. Anyway, again, your choice to listen to this. Nobody actually forced you to do this. All right, we have a great guest coming on later in the program, and all kinds of wonderful things will occur. There'll be a fireworks display in about 10 minutes, which will be fascinating on the radio. You're going to love it. But right now, are you having a party at your house? You may need some help this year.
Do you throw boring parties? Do your guests stand about with tepid drinks in their hands, vapidly striving for anything interesting to say to anyone? Do they glance at their watches around 9 p.m. and say, oh, look at the time? Your parties need something, and you know it. Your parties need me, Thompson St. Thomas, Fancy Bastard. For a gentlemanly, prearranged fee, I will arrive fashionably late to your party, bringing with me that dash of irresistible British charm and a soupçon of the joie de vivre of the French. Soon I'll have your guests regaled with stories of my vacation villa in Saint-Tropez, my zany youthful adventures in boys' school, and that one time I met the prince. Quite a story. For an extra fee, I could be the cheeky one, telling blue jokes and winking roguishly at all the girls. Got a piano? I've got a repertoire. Because what English gent can't just sit down at the Ivories and knock out everything from a raucous pub tune to a bit of Gershwin? I know I can. Because I'm Thompson St. Thomas, Fancy Bastard. And I'll see you at your next party. What time shall I arrive?
Hi, Ron. How are you?
Hey, Dario. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Dario Gill is Chief Operating Officer and Vice President of Quantum and AI, IBM Research. That sounds like a big thing. We're talking about top artificial intelligence achievements of 2018 and what's ahead for 2019 prediction-wise. These are subjects that I know very little about, to be honest with you. So what were some of the greatest achievements of 2018?
AI itself and the idea of creating intelligent machines have been the source of fascination, right, for humans for many decades. And we've seen it in science fiction, we've seen it in movies, and it has been a scientific discipline on its own right since the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
But to realize it in practice, it's been a long road, right? I think at the beginning, scientists were really optimistic that it was going to be easy to do.
Yes.
And it turned out it wasn't, right? And for good reason, because, you know, intelligence of the form humans possess is an extraordinary achievement and accomplishment and level of difficulty from a biology perspective.
Sure.
So what has happened in 18 and just over the last few years is that what I would refer to as a narrow form of AI has begun to work. And what do I mean by that?
I don't know.
Well, take as an example speech recognition. Right. We began to see now that AI is coming into our lives in the form of a smart speaker
right,
that we could have in our home, and we can issue commands,
yes,
and it will turn on the radio, etc. Right?
Yes,
we've seen it in driver assist and the more exploratory projects in self-driving cars.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen AI now enter the life of medicine as well, where you can use it to sort of detect and learn the patterns and learn what's going on medical imaging, right? So, as an example, detect melanoma, right, and whether it's present. So what I would say a big inflection point is that a narrow form of AI has begun to work.
Uh-huh.
But we're also seeing now that there are breakthroughs in the research lab that tells us about what's coming next. And one of the ones that I'd like to share with you is we've built a machine that can debate human beings. That's just issue commands, but full debate.
And what would be the purpose of that?
Well, in the most so we did it to for scientific and technical reasons, but I'll give you the more lofty purpose as well in a minute.
All right.
The technical reasons is we want to be able to build systems that can deal with the complexity of engaging with humans. And while commands is okay, it's not great, right? I mean, look at the dialogue we're having with each other now, back and forth,
mm-hmm,
where we have long forms of speech. You really have to understand the arguments of what are being said and truly engage in that back and forth.
Are you talking about the White House specifically or just in general?
Just in general,
oh,
I guess.
Okay, fine.
So we created this system, this AI system called Project Debater, and here's what it does. So, given a controversial topic, whatever you wanna pick, like I don't know, we should increase the level of subsidies of telemedicine or whatever is the topic that we're interested in. The system has to automatically generate a 4-minute opening speech,
mm-hmm,
so the equivalent. Let's say you give it to the debate in favor or against the motion. They
mm-hmm
essentially have to write an essay and deliver it to you compellingly. Then with the human that is debating against the system will deliver their own opening speech.
Mm-hmm.
And while that's happening, let's say the opening speech for the human is 4 minutes too, the system has to be listening to that entire 4 minutes.
Yes.
That's much more difficult than understanding a command.
Yes.
And understand what are the points being made, and you got to create then automatically a rebuttal, another 4-minute speech to rebut.
Yes.
It's illustrative of, while it's a research system, it's illustrative of that future that is coming, which is go from a narrow form of AI to a broader form of AI that is still well short of general artificial intelligence like
mm-hmm
we possess, like we humans possess,
mm-hmm,
but it's also a significant advancement for the field.
Huh. Let me ask you something that's not part of the survey, just out of interest. Do you think that human beings, or Americans, let's say, are more accepting of AI than they were? There was always a fear through prior generation that AI would overtake us, would be more intelligent than us, and creating that was creating a societal shift in machine and human. Has that kind of gone away? Is it more now fancy and interest and welcoming?
I think that we make it practical and it touches our lives in a way that is helping them,
mm-hmm,
we do, in general, become much more accepting. You are right that through the field of the history of AI, there's always been a part of the debate that has oscillated between what I refer to utopia and dystopia,
yes,
right? So the dystopian version is the one we've seen very often in Hollywood movies and so on, right?
Correct.
Like AI that takes over
right,
and so
right,
on.
Right.
we've also have a story of utopia, of AI that is going to do all the work for us, mm-hmm. and we're going to engage in like leisure activities mm-hmm. for life and mm-hmm. so on. Like.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality of it, obviously, is that it's neither of them.
Right.
And the field has progressed, you know, significantly, but also, but not in a way that has manifested either of those two extremes. And,
right.
and really, for me, the way I think about it, the way forward, is that AI, like all technology, has to be at the service of us, of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that we really should focus on creating forms of AI that are complementary to us, that in the end help us do things that we couldn't do before,
mm-hmm.
akin to what happened with the Industrial Revolution and the mechanical extension, right?
Yes.
The idea there was, my goodness, we have limitations of how much we can lift and move
right.
and so on.
Right.
So we create an extension that allow us to build a modern world.
Right.
AI is going to have a parallel to that idea, but extending our mental ability.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't run out of problems to solve in the world, as we all know.
Right.
So therefore, being able to manage complexity better mm-hmm. and help us a form of intelligence that allows us to make better decisions mm-hmm. and understand the world better, I think has enormous potential. We got to be vigilant that we don't build AI that is not well-suited to what
right.
we need.
Right.
But that's a general statement of technology, and it's not just about the field of AI. That
well, you're right.
Talk about nuclear technology or biology,
exactly.
et cetera,
exactly.
as examples of that.
That's an, like the person who invented dynamite, Nobel Peace Prize. You know, dynamite,
right.
not good, and good. So, yeah. There's a lot more to talk about, but we're limited in time, and IBM is at the forefront of this research. How do we get more information as to what is coming and what these surveys put out?
Yeah, if you go to research.ibm.com, you will find out, you know, a wonderful amount of information about where the field is today and some of the top advances in 2018, as well as our predictions in 2019, and we also have their content about this Project Debater, right?
Yes.
And you'll get to learn more about what does it mean to build an AI system that can debate humans. Well,
you know what I think, just, you know, if you go back to the IBM people and tell them you were talking to Ron on the radio, and he'd like you to invent this, and it could be a $1 billion industry, tiny little batteries that last, like, for a month, there'd be no more power outages. It would power just tiny little cells the size of a finger or something like that. That'd be a wonderful invention.
That would be a wonderful and powerful invention.
So,
I will definitely take it on, and I'll just put a seed that one technology in the future that will help realize that vision
yes.
is quantum computing, which is something else that we're also working, because it'll help us design better materials.
Okay. Can we split the profits on that, or that's already in the works?
Right. I'm always open to hearing deals. There you
okay,
go.
Right. Hey, great talking to you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Ron.
Take care. Well, there you have it. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been such a treat for me. I am alone in this. I realize that. I'm not stupid. But I will be back again tomorrow with a brand new show, and I hope you join me then. Now, I'm not just saying that to be funny, because it's not funny. I am going to electronically send you, through your email, a contract. And you don't have to pay any money. All you have to do is agree to listen to this program every day, or at least every weekday. I will not give out any of your information. I will not give out your name, your phone number, your sex, your friends' names, where you were born, how old you are. That's all available on Facebook. No, this is just a contract between you and me. And you're saying, well, Ron, if I agree to listen to your show every freaking weekday, what are you going to do for me? That's funny. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that's about it for me today. Please have yourself a wonderful day, because I think that's important to do. It's all a mindset. That's right. It's a mindset. You make sure you have a wonderful day. Put a smile on your face. Think about happy things. Wish I had a list of happy things that I could think about. Well, Until then, until tomorrow, I wish you peace. Okay, I'm finished. You can go. You can go now. That's it. It's over. I've had enough. I've had enough of this. That's it. Oh, well.